Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Shank of katelovingshank.com, prayerprescriptions.com, author of the Prayer Prescription series, and creator of Kate Loving's Prayer Podcast. Prayer prescriptions that rewire assumptions about your everyday reality. My guest this evening is Tim Link, animal communicator. Animal lovers often wonder what their pets meow, bark, tweet, or stare mean. Why the incessant meowing after Kitty has been fed, petted, and played with? Why is Fido barking up a storm or digging in the garden as if his life depended on it? Pet owners want to know, and Tim Link, an expert animal communicator, teaches readers how to find out. The author was initially surprised to find himself being able to communicate with animals of all types. Because Tim Link was caught off guard by his own gift, He is adept at helping readers first hone their communication skills using the spoken and the visual, and then focus on particular behaviors. Unlike most training methods, Link's approach respects the individual personality and feelings of animals. His method, simple and accessible to all, facilitates the understanding that all animals lovers crave. Joining me now is Tim Link. Hello, Tim. Hello, Tim. Is that you on 770 area code? Hello, Tim. I wonder what is going on. I think maybe he will be calling back. But I just finished reading this book, and what I have noticed, what is accentuated throughout, is this need, and if you really want your dog and your cat to respond to you, understand what it is that you want them to do. You don't do it in any punitive way. You actually do it in a way that you just talk with them. You talk to them, you tell them what you're doing and when you intend to do it. Hello, Tim Link.
Hello.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm great. A little technological glitch there, I think.
There you go.
Glitch.
There you go. But all is good now.
Oh, it's always good. It's always good. I was just, when you came, you know, hung up and came back on, I was just explaining how all we really have to do is tell our animals what it is that we want them to do. And but, you know, through love, it's all love, love, love. I mean, they are so in tune with us that and so sensitive. So, you know, there's a whole thing going on here. I was just wondering, first of all, what led you to become an animal communicator to begin with?
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't one of those things my high school counselor presented to me as an option. So,
right, right.
I think most of us would have signed up for it early on. But, you know, it came to me quite accidentally. I think at the right and perfect time that it presented itself. You know, my background was basically a very simple background. I loved animals, but we didn't have a lot of room for animals in our family. grew up with two older sisters and my mom and dad in a 675 square foot house. So not a whole lot of room for animals, but we did have a dog and a shepherd collie mix named Bandit. And he lived a nice, long, healthy life, though he spent his times outside in the cold of winter in Indiana. So we provided for him. But you know, I wasn't one of these people that, you know, rescued cats from trees and brought home squirrels to mend and these type of things. I just had a respect for him and a love for him. But I went on to college. First, my family to go to college, paid for my way through college, and started a career in telecommunications. Spent 20 years as a telecom executive and traveled the world selling to some of the biggest companies in the telecom industry. But back in 2004, that was all going to change. There was an unbeknownst shift going on in my life that I didn't really know was going to happen. And during that shift, there was a communicator that came to town, an animal communicator by the name of Judy Byers, the late Judy Byers. And Judy came to town to teach this little half-day workshop. And the workshop was designed to sort of learn to breathe to relax, breathe to open yourself up, open up your chakras and open up your mind and your heart. The techniques taught you how to meditate, how to calm yourself down, and how to really listen to your animals. And we'd had a plethora of animals in our life. My wife, Kim, and I have been married for almost 30 years, and we've had numerous dogs, cats, turtles, birds, fish, you name it, we've had it in our lives. And Kim had heard about Judy coming to town, wanted to take this small workshop, very similar to the workshops I teach today, though mine are quite more intense, more lengthy. And I just went to the workshop thinking, okay, this will be fun. It's my wife's birthday weekend, so we could have a good time being around people that love animals. And during the workshop, using the techniques that a lot of them are listed in the book, Talking with Dogs and Cats, and the techniques teach you how to calm yourself down, open yourself up, and learn to trust the information the animals are trying to share with you. So during the workshop, that's what we did. We practiced this. We worked with animals, both live animals as well as animals in the form of pictures, and connected with those animals. And we asked them simple questions, questions that only their human companions or their caretakers knew the answers to, but we didn't know what the answers were. You know, they're fairly simple questions, things like, you know, what color is Spot's water bowl, where does Fluffy like to sleep at night, where does Winnie eat her hay, these type of things. And we were asked to focus on the animals, see what we received back from them, whether it was words or colors, feelings, pictures, emotions, whatever it was, we were to jot down the information, and then we would compare it with their human companions to see how accurate the information was that we were receiving. And so I went through the techniques, I connected with the animals. Surprisingly to me, I did receive information from every animal I connected with. At that time, it was usually a couple of words or maybe a vision, a picture in my mind's eye of what the animal was sharing with me. But to a bigger surprise, after going through about nearly 60, 70 questions and probably well over 25 different animals that we connected with, not only did I receive the information, but it was 100% accurate.
Wow.
Yeah, cool. That's what I thought, too.
Yeah.
So I thought, yeah, wow, this is cool. This is strange. What in the world does this mean? Maybe I'm on a hot streak here. Maybe I should go out and play the lotto immediately because I'm really cooking today. You know, get a ticket to Vegas, maybe play the roulette wheel, something of this sort. And then as I worked with it a little bit more and thought about it a little bit more, I thought, well, how in the world were these two worlds going to align? You know, it wasn't like I could, you know, go to the head executive, chief executive of a major telecommunications company and say, well, you know what, if you invest in this technology that I'm presenting to you today, I'll come by and tell you why Fluffy's not using the litter box anymore. Yeah, I knew those worlds weren't aligned up. They're not aligned today. They're getting closer, but we're not quite there yet. And I really didn't know what it was that I had. You know, the gift had opened itself up and really didn't know what it was. I was convinced what I was doing and learned to trust it. So
right.
I continue to work with it, work with my own animals. Later on, worked with friends and family members' animals. Became part of an animal healing ministry at my church, which afforded me opportunities to work with more animals, and especially animals that were going to make their transition or had made their transition, helping grief counseling, helping people through the grief of losing an animal. And then later on became president of a local humane society, a no-kill shelter here in the North Georgia area. So it afforded me more and more opportunities to work on this, work on my gift, help the animals out. And it got to the point where, you know, I was receiving multiple words, colors, feelings, pictures, emotions, smells, tastes. Whatever the animal was willing to share with me was what I was receiving. And I learned to open myself up to that, trust what I was receiving, and then share it back with the human companions and see what that meant to them and see if we could come up with a better understanding of how they can build a better relationship and a better understanding and bond with their animals. And so at that point, you know, the word sort of got out. I started receiving emails and phone calls from people literally around the world. And I had to make a decision on what this was all about. I didn't know whether I should continue my successful career in telecommunications and play this quietly, softly in the background of the world, or whether this is really my purpose for being here, my reason for being here, helping animals and people out. And it was very very clear to me that this is my purpose. This is the reason I'm here. And so I've been doing it ever since, full-time, been doing it for over a decade now, and it's been a blessing.
Well, your telecommunications background is certainly helping you with this particular purpose that you have, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's all about communicating, whether we're talking about human to human or human to animal. When we open ourselves up to communicating properly, whether we're using verbal communication, whether we're using body language, or whether we're using visualization, you know, every time we say a word or series of words, we're sending a mental picture out of what exactly we're saying. And both humans and animals are very in tune with that, especially our animals. So when we open up that line of communication, we better understand each other and we build better relationships and better bonds and better heart connections.
Well, can everybody learn to communicate with animals in the way that you are have just explained to us?
Well, I think we can, and I think we can do it a lot better than what we're doing today. I still got a long way to go, and I've been doing this for, you know, over a decade now. When we're young, when we're very small, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, we're already connecting with everything around us. We haven't been taught to act a certain way. We haven't perhaps learned our vocabulary or the proper way to work within what we know as society today. But so we're open to it. That's why when you see small children, they're able to connect. They're able to connect with the animals and have conversations with them, and they have true conversations with them. You know, we talk about things like a mother's instinct. A mother's instinct when little Timmy is sitting there on the floor and little Timmy hasn't developed his vocabulary yet, but the mom knows. The mom has that heart connection with Timmy. She has her instinct, her mother's instinct built within her. And when she looks at little Timmy, Timmy doesn't have to say a word, but she knows something perhaps is not quite right, or Timmy needs something, or maybe Timmy's not feeling well. And she acts upon it, and if she trusts it, she'll find out more often than not she's 100% correct. There was something going on with Timmy, and nobody else could see it. And you ask the mother, Well, how did you know that? And she said, I don't know. I got a feeling. I got a vision. I got an instinct. I got an overall sensation that this is what he was trying to tell me. And we trust that. And so I think that it goes all the way back to that time period in our lives. The challenge is by the time we, you know, go to school and we get involved in society, we tend to lose that. We tend to use our verbal skills and try to pick up on even more body language than we do actually connecting at that sort of deep instinctual level. Where on the other hand, our animals, that's how they communicate every day. They communicate on a telepathic level, that instinctual level. They don't have to say words. They don't have to do motions. They know exactly what the other one's trying to tell them. And so we just sort of have to step back. We have to take our time. We have to breathe. We have to open ourselves up to the idea and then trust the information we're receiving. And I think we'd all be able to to do a much better job than perhaps what we're doing today.
Right. Slowing down is the answer with animals. Slowing down, being on their wavelength, spending time with them. I mean, we have a dog now who was a feral dog. And so that required a little bit more of an understanding of what she needed when she came to us. But as you say in your book, it really isn't necessary for us to know what happened to her or what kind of abuses she may have suffered, for instance, because she doesn't really care about it. She's just happy to be with us. We communicate with her in the way that you talk about in your book, except that I think I can do a lot better in completing the whole communication cycle, especially when I can tell her the whole idea of time. I never knew that animals do have a sense of time, because I didn't think they had one. So tell us a little bit about that. In other words, when I say, I'm leaving now to go to work, and I'll be home at such and such a time, tell me how they can possibly understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, when we communicate, as mentioned before, we're not only using verbal words, but we're automatically sending a mental picture of what we're trying to talk about. So if I tell you that, hey, I'm getting ready to go to work, I'll be home at 6 p.m., you know, I'm going to see Susie at work. Well, you've already sent a mental picture of that, and you've realized that you see yourself, whether you know it or not, you see yourself going to work, you see spending time at work, you see yourself spending time with Susie, you see yourself coming home at a certain time. So you've already mentally projected that out, and animals are very in tune with that mental projection. So we have to be very clear on not only the words that we're saying, but the mental picture that we're submitting out there. And then, of course, every time we talk to animals verbally and we cognizantly send a very strong mental picture out of what we're trying to say to them, what we're trying to communicate with them, we feel better. Our energy goes up that positive realm, that positive level. You know, it's that old saying of talk about it, you'll feel better. You know, talk about it, get it off your chest, you know. And getting it off your chest means you're opening up those chakras, you're opening your heart chakras, you're opening yourself up to communicate with them. So we know it works. We know speaking to them, they understand us, because we've learned that through all of our training techniques, the sits, the stays, the lays, the pick, you know, the leave-its, all the things we teach our animals. But we also can send that strong visualization out there so they stay in tune with that, so they know what we're talking about. So when you say that you're going to go to work and you're going to be home at 6 p.m., and you cognizantly see that, say, that the clock moving to 6 p.m., or going from light to the evening when the sun sets, when you send that picture out, the animals know this. And that's why most of the time, if you've done a good job of doing that, they're sitting there waiting for you. They're at the door waiting for you. I used this the other, just Sunday. Sunday we went to see some friends downtown, and I told them I'd be home at a certain time. We ran an hour late, so I slowed myself down and I sent a mental projection to them and told them we'd be home at 6 o'clock instead of 5 o'clock, and I saw the clock move to 6 o'clock. And meanwhile, as we pulled in the drive, there they were sitting at the door. Now you think, well, okay, well, you know, they heard the car pull up. Well, no, that's not actually the case, because we had a pet sitter sitting with them all day. And she said they did not move from the couch until 15 minutes beforehand. 15 minutes before the time you said you would come, they went to the door and they sat there. Now,
yes.
So, you know, if they were expecting me at 5, they would have been sitting there at 5. And if I would not have communicated with them, I'd be there at 6. They would be sitting there for the hour waiting for me. So they do understand that, and time's a big part of it, especially when we're talking about animals that have separation anxiety. If we're not leaving the house and telling them where we're going, when we'll be back, and give them a specific time or a date or how many days if you're going on vacation. And then most importantly, leave them with an easy job to do. Nothing stressful. No guarding the house, you never tell them not to do something, like, you know, don't tear up the couch, because they're going to tear up the couch if you say not. But you leave them with something nice and easy to do, like keep your favorite blanket warm for me, chew on your favorite chew bone for me, something nice and easy for them to do. Because if you tell them to guard the house, they're going to guard the house, and they're going to be stressed out the whole time that you're gone, and you'll get back and you'll have probably some challenges on your hands.
Yeah, speaking of separation anxiety, a friend of mine had just gotten a dog. I believe he lives in Jackson, Mississippi, and he had heard that we were going to be talking tonight. And he was this dog has separation anxiety, and they are crate training him, and he's doing pretty well with that. And I'm just wondering, you know, it seems that there's a certain amount of fear that the dog has that he's going to be abandoned, I think. So what is the best way for them to the dog, actually, and to explain everything, including in the way that you suggest, you know, you just have to really let them know with mental pictures and soothe them and maybe project an image that they are safe.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in the book, my book, Talking with Dogs and Cats, you know, it's sort of broken down into two areas. The first part is sort of Animal Communication 101. How can you verbally and visually communicate with them better so they better understand you? And in return, how do you open yourself up to understanding and accepting what they're trying to share with you? And then the second part of the book deals with these everyday challenges. If you got dogs and cats in your life, somewhere down the line or somewhere in time in your life, you've experienced these challenges. Things like, why does the dog bark consistently or constantly when the doorbell rings? Why does my dog always pull me on leash? Separation anxiety is in there. Crate training is in there. So all these things that everyone that has animals in their life, dogs and cats in their life, have experienced or they have challenges with, some areas more than others. But separation anxiety is a big one, and I'm a big proponent of crate training. So in the book, I talk a little bit about how to ease their anxiety, you know, they want to know what's going on. They know when something is going to happen. You know, we have a shift in our energy when we know something is going to happen. Guarded as my wife and I have tried to be this week, we're planning a little trip to the beach coming up here in the next few days, and we going to the beach. And my little toy schnauzer, Dusty, she loves the beach. My Kramer boy, he loves the woods, so we have sort of a counterbalance there. But we cognizantly have kept them informed about what's going on, but our anxiety about it, you know, packing and getting ready, what do we need to do? It's a new beach, so we don't know the area. Our energy has shifted a little bit. And so during that time, you know, the dogs have picked up on that, so they've been very anxious. Every time we make a move, you know, they're grabbing their toys and going for the door. It's like, are we going now? Are we going now? Are we going now? So they think it's going to happen today. So when we talk about things, whether we're talking to them or whether we're talking to each other or a friend, whomever it is, they pick up on that and they think it is today. So for your friend, when they're leaving the house, that's why it's very important for them to, first of all, get them all situated in the crate. Have the crate out at all times. The crate should be the dog's sanctuary. It's a place they can go to just to relax and to rest and get away from things. It has to be a normal piece of furniture. It can't be a place that the dog is forced to go to when you're leaving, because that adds additional stress. It should be a place that your dog wants to go to. And you prep it the way that your dog prefers. You know, you make it comfortable in there. You put its favorite blanket in there. Perhaps before you leave, you give it a treat or give it a Kong bone, with frozen peanut butter in it. Keeps them occupied for hours. Give them a little treat there. You turn a little table fan on to provide some white noise. You can find out your dog's favorite channel to listen to music, which is very, very important. You can play around with this. It's really cool. They have their favorite music they want to listen to, things that calm them down just like we do. And it may not be your favorite channel, and it's definitely not talk radio. I'm sorry.
No, right.
But they don't, you know, the voices. So you do these things to prep them ahead of time. But the big thing as far as the communication is concerned, that's when you tell them. You know, you tell them exactly what's going on, where you're going. You tell them when you're going to be back. And you tell them that here's what I need you to do while you're gone. And so, and you leave feeling confident that this is going to happen. You don't ever doubt that there's going to be a problem when you get back home. And your dog eases down into the situation. And the more you do this, the better your dog handles it. And it's the same thing with cats. You know, whether you're crate training a cat or not, you use the same technique with them. You start off with baby steps. Perhaps you just leave the house and go to the mailbox and then come back, and you praise them for doing a great job and being calm and patient, and you give them treats and give them love and give them praise. The next time you start your car and you drive around the block and you come back, so you get them used to that, and then maybe go on a little trip into the grocery store, and you work your way up to it. So when by the time it's all said and done, they've gotten comfortable with their crate or without, you know, with you leaving them there alone. You've clearly communicated with them verbally and visually and confidently, positively, that what's going on, what they need to do, and why is it going to be a good thing for them. And then when you get home and all is well, you're praising them like they've done the greatest thing in the world, which is pretty cool what they've done. And they like that. They know that. And they feel comforted in the fact that, hey, he did say that he's going to be home at 6, and guess what? He's home at 6, and I'm happy, and things are good. And so putting those steps into motion, and like I said, I talk a lot about that in the book, Talking with Dogs and Cats. You put these things into motion, you stay consistent with them, it becomes part of your routine, part of your normal life with your animals, and you'll start to find that your animals are more comfortable and confident, and you're building even a better bond with them.
So you have a radio show where people can call in and ask you questions about their problems, so-called problems with their animals?
Well, at this time, my radio show is the Animal Rights Show on Pet Life Radio and iHeartRadio. So it's not a call-in show. I've had call-in shows in the past, and I participate on shows like yours where we do call-in. So definitely I do a lot of those. Keep an eye on that. You can go to talkingwithdogsandcats.com to find out about my media appearances and workshops and all the things that I'm doing. And then you can also go to my website, which is wagging-tales.com, wagging-tales.com. And there you'll find out more about my private consultations and my radio appearances. But my radio show, Animal Rights. Yeah. But the Animal Rights Show is a good show. I'll give a real quick plug for that. As I mentioned, it's on Pet Life Radio, iHeartRadio, and about 50 other channels nationwide. And that show, I have the pleasure to interview top-rated authors, writers that either write about animals or have animals as a theme or a character in their book. So we've interviewed Dr. Marty Becker, my good friend Victoria Stillwell from It's Me or the Dog, James Patterson's been on the show. Pretty much if you go into a bookstore or go on your favorite online bookstore and you pull up a book that has a puppy dog, kitty cat, or some other animal on it, there's a good chance I'm interviewing those folks.
Yeah, so it's Animal, W-R-I-T-E-S, instead of Animal, R-I-G-H-T-S. I just wanted to make that clear. That distinction clear.
Absolutely.
I actually wrote a book called 365 Prayer Prescriptions for Dog and Cat Lovers. And it's every day, you know, there's a little meditation. And I just want to put a plug in, too, for meditating with your animals. That is a wonderful thing to do because you actually have bonded with them in a heart-to-heart way without even speaking at all about anything. And it's another form of communication. You know, you're just going into another sphere of reaching spirit together, I would say. And that's a wonderful thing that people can do with their animals.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things I talk a lot about in my workshops is meditation. And, you know, often people think meditation is, a very formal thing. You know, you have to sit in the lotus position. And I tell people, well, I can sit in the lotus position on the floor, but there's not a very good likelihood I'm going to get up easily off the floor once I do that. So, I've done meditation with the Tibetan monks, but unfortunately after about 40 minutes, my butt went numb and they were still going strong. So we'll just leave it at that. But meditation is more than, it's really more than that formal thing that we think of, chanting and listening to music and getting in a lotus position and burning incense. All these things are really, really good, and definitely do that with your animals. you'll find out probably that if you're doing meditation on a regular basis, your animals naturally want to be part of that because they want to be part of
the
energy, and they want the clearing themselves. But also, you know, meditation is much broader than that. Meditation is anything that takes you out of your conscious mind and opens up your subconscious, opens up your chakras, opens up your heart and your intuition to receive whatever it is around you. So meditation can be that formal, but meditation could be the prayer work that you do if you do prayer work. It could be your gardening if you're a gardener. That is one form of meditation. Listening to music is another form of meditation. And walking your dogs, being part of nature.
Oh, yeah.
Big part of meditation. It takes you away from everything. I mean, and that's very important. I talk about that in the book, and the fact that as we're spending time with our animals, not only is it very, very important to give them physical stimulation, but you want to give them mental stimulation, especially when we're talking about our cats. Our cats, you know, are very independent creatures, and we tend not to pay a whole lot of attention to them unless they're coming around to see us. And
yes.
They need that same type of mental stimulation just like our dogs do. And so it's very important to get into that state where you're actually spending time with them, whether it's meditation or just quality, quiet time with them, and just being part of the present moment, being part of their present moments that they always live in. Observing the things that they observe, just the fascinating things. Our cats can find a cobweb or a little spider that we've never seen before, and it's there in our house. Or our dog fascinated by a bug in the backyard, or a flower that we rarely pay attention to. So, being in that present moment, allowing yourself that quiet time and that connection, you'll be able to bond even closer, have a better bond with your animals.
Oh, there's no question about it. And as much as I love my cat, I have pretty much let him do what he wants to do without much paying much attention to him at all, except for taking care of him, of course. But he was a feral cat, so he's coming around more and more, and he's meditating with us. And it seems like since that has happened, and he's taken part in that ritual that we do with the dog, and the dog and the cat are very close. He has become more communicative, and now I'm going to be applying what you teach in your book to him, because it's one thing to do it with dogs. It's easier to do it with dogs, but cats are just a little bit more mysterious.
Well, you know, and I think we allow them to be more mysterious because we don't spend that quality time with them perhaps like we do with our dogs. In the book, I give there's a lot of stories from both my clients as well as my personal experiences. And in the book, I talk about feral cats is a big part of it. I've had the pleasure of trap neutering and releasing 13 feral cats. And little did I know that we had a great, great setup, actually. A feral cat showed up, and then all of a sudden three females showed up. And then the three females were pregnant, and all of a sudden there's 13 cats. So that's how that tends to work. Yes.
It does work that way, yes.
It does. So my neighbor and I set up a real nice situation where I would trap the cats one by one. I would let them know what's going on and what they needed to do and why it was going to be okay ultimately for them. I would take them to the vet to get them neutered or spayed. My neighbor would pick them up, take them to her house, allow them to heal for the day, and then release them. And that worked like clockwork. We did 13 cats in about a 15-week period of time, so it worked out really well for us. And we thought, okay, knowing feral cats as we do, that there's a colony, you know, they form a colony, and there's a place they like to stay. Now, if you set food out for them, they will eventually come and eat your food, but they'll tend to go back to wherever their colony is in the neighborhood, typically. Well, these cats decided, hey, you know what? These guys, despite the fact that they took us to this nasty vet to get all that stuff done to us and get our shots and get everything done to us, they're pretty good, and their grub they set out for us is pretty top-notch, so I think we'll stay here. And that's what ended up happening. They ended up staying at our house, and we opened the garage door slightly, and then that led to cat beds, and it led to heated cat beds, and one period of time we had 13 cats at the house. Some of them found homes, and yes. But in the book I talk about, you know, Mama Kitty is one of the characters in the book, and she's the feral cat. Oh, she's such a Zen master.
Yes.
Well, she's
yes.
A, you know, she is the one that, you know, she loves to supervise and loves to observe. And when I'm out doing something and not paying attention to her or anything else around, she'll come up and just sit quietly. She doesn't come up directly to me, but she'll sit within, you know, 5 feet of me or 10 feet of me, and just sit there until she gets my notion. And without saying a word, without doing a single thing, she sends out that telepathic connection that we have, that heart connection we have, and I connect with her, and it makes me stop exactly what I'm doing at the moment and realize that I need to have a conversation with her. And that's what we do. So,
well, it sounds like she loves to have conversations. She sounds like she's quite conversant.
She is, in her own way. And, you know, when we think about our cats being conversive, you know, we think of all the meows and the purrs and the outward things that they're communicating. But really, can they communicate without saying a single thing or doing a single thing but sitting there? And the answer is yes. They can definitely communicate, and probably at a deeper level. So it's a great opportunity to sit and just be in their present moment and receive those messages.
Tell us a story about the cat who picked up on his mistress's anger at having to work more.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, there's a story in part of this. I have another book out called Wagging Tales, and it's a collection of 32 stories of animals I've worked with. And the story goes like this. There was a friend of mine at church. She had a cat for years and years and years, still has the cat, actually. And for 10 years, she pretty much had the same routine, and her and the cat got along splendidly. Everything went well. She would go to work each day. She'd come back home, and the cat would be laying there, not at the front door, but just laying there waiting. Everything was going well. And but all of a sudden, over like a two-week period, the cat's behavior started to change. Cat started scratching the back of the couch and tearing down the drapes and tearing up the rugs, getting into all kinds of mischief. And if, so she made the decision that, well, we need to check this out. And knowing me, you know, we've had conversations that if our cat or animals is changed their behavior, it's usually either a physical, a mental, or an emotional thing they're going through. So to err on the side of caution, rule out the physical aspect of it first. Take your animal to the vet and make sure there's nothing physically going on with them. So she did that, and everything checked out all just fine, but her cat continued this process. So she wanted me to communicate with her cat to find out what was going on, so I did. And the cat had very little to say, but one thing it consistently said was, use the word changes, the changes, there's changes. And so I asked her what changes had gone on in her life. She said, absolutely nothing. So I went through the process of that I call peeling back the onion. You're getting down to the heart of the onion. Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a very slow, painful process, but you have to peel back to find out, okay, what does this mean? Because as a communicator, I'm communicating the information to your animal. I'm receiving information back, but you know your animal better than I do. You have the heart connection and the life with your animal. So as I'm telling you that here's what the animal is sharing, I'm hoping that that makes sense to you, that we can come to some sort of conclusion about what it is the animal is trying to say. And sometimes it's a little bit more vague than others, and so we have to continue to peel back that onion. So in this case, I said, okay, well, you say there's no changes. Let's go through this. Has there been a change in the couch or the rugs or the drapes? Did you get new stuff? Did you clean them? Et cetera, et cetera. Nope, no changes. Everything's the same. Everything's in the same spot. It's the same stuff. We haven't cleaned it. We're good there. Okay, cat, go back to the cat. Cat says changes, changes, changes. I said, okay, well, what's changing your routine? Has somebody new come over? Has somebody left? Is there a new friend in your life? What happened there? Nope, that's all the same. So we're peeling back the onion even more. I ask her about her job. Is your job the same? She said, yeah, same job, same everything. And then she said, and, you know, I've had to work a little later recently. I'm like, oh, really? She said, yeah, I usually get home around 5 o'clock pretty consistently, but lately we've had to close out the books. She's an accountant. And she said, I've been getting home around 7. I said, oh, really? I said, well, how long has that been going on? She said, 2, and then she paused. 2 weeks. I'm like, oh, so about the time your cat started showing an outward sign of a behavior change and trying to get your attention was the same exact time that you had shifted your schedule. And mm-hmm. did you tell your cat that you were going to be home at 7 o'clock instead of 5 o'clock? And she said, no, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back to that. And, you know, I told her, before you leave, you let her know where you're going, what time you're going to be back, and what is she to do while you're gone. And lo and behold, she put that into play, quite skeptical at first, but she did put it into play. And ever since that day, her cat not only hasn't torn up a single thing in the house, but is waiting for her at the front door like a dog would.
Every
single time. And it's worked consistently. Now, that story, you know, it dates back many, many years. We're talking back probably now 7-8 years. And this cat's consistently never shown any sign of behavior change or aggression towards furniture or the things in the house. And as long as she's continued to tell her cat what's up, the cat's fine. And so get in that routine, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
every time, especially when you leave that house, but even when you're not leaving the house, let your animals know what the situation is, what they need to do, and why is this going to be a good thing for them? Why is this okay? If you do that on a consistent basis and get that as part of your just your normal routine with your animals, you're going to find that you're going to have an even greater relationship with them.
Yeah, I have a dog we take care of every Christmas time. Around 2 weeks, he's coming. He's a golden doodle. He's about 28 pounds. He's not one of the big ones. And our cat doesn't like him, and he doesn't like our cat. So I have never bothered to communicate with either of them. What happens is that they start acting out, and it becomes sort of a nightmare. So I can see now, you know, in preparation for this event, I can talk to the cat, and then I'm going to have to go over and talk to the dog before he comes over. And let him know. Yeah, talk to him. Maybe how many times do I have to do that? Just once, probably, because he's a smart guy.
Yeah, just one time, but just make it normal conversation. You know, if you want to give him a reminder before he comes over, do that. If you want them to greet each other in a neutral location at first, say in the mm-hmm. garage or on the back porch or, you know, somewhere of that sort, you can do that. You know, this is a this is like having the unwanted relative come over. It's the way I look at this. Yes, yes. My parents were in their life, they're very old school, you know, and I guess, I don't know if this is the way it is across the nation, but, you know, in the Midwest where I come from, it was not uncommon for a relative to show up and mm-hmm. visit, and you have no idea how long they're going to stay. It could be an hour. It could be a week. You don't know. You don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you're thrilled to death that they showed up, and other times you're like, okay, well, hey, you know, I just so happens I got rid of that extra bedroom suit. So, ooh, darn. But in any case, that's what we're talking about, this unwanted relative. So the more you can sort of prep yourself, and I think from your standpoint, what you need to do is not only communicate with your animals, but I would highly suggest you getting your head around it, you feeling positive about it. You know, you communicate about it, make it a positive situation. Because, yeah, if you go into this thinking, oh, my gosh, there's going to be heck to pay here, well, guess what? They're not going to let you down. They're going to stay true to what you're projecting, and you're going to get exactly what you receive or send out there. So it's very important for you to feel confident once you communicate that all is going to go well. I see this happening the right and perfect way, and I'm going to, every time they do it the right way, that they sit in the same vicinity near each other, or they do something really good, I praise them and I give them treats and act like a dog and a cat's never existed in the same household before. And that's how you sort of get yourself prepped for it and follow through with it.
Well, this sounds like good advice for just living life, you know, visualizing the best and not awfulizing everything and thinking that the end is near.
Absolutely. You know, we know that what we put out there is what we receive.
Yes.
So if we're putting out positive imagery, positive energy, we feel good about it, feel confident, we're going to receive that back. It's not perhaps the way we necessarily expected to receive it. It may not even be in our timeline that we expected.
Mm-hmm.
It will come back to you. And just the opposite, if we're worried about everything, if we're spending so much time in the future or in the past, we never are able to connect in the present moment. And in the book, Talking with Dogs and Cats, I go into the detail of how, you know, animals have a past and a present and a future just like we do. And I see this a lot in situations where we've got feral animals or animals that were rescued from shelters, these type of things, where the animal has had a past, maybe a challenging past, but they don't live in that past. Once we allow them to release that past, they take whatever the situation was, apply it and deal with it in the present moment, live in that present moment and not worry about the future, fulfill their purpose for being here each and every day in that present moment. Unlike us humans, we have this tendency to drag up our past or hold it up, as I say in the book, like a golden egg. Like, oh, you thought your family was bad. Well, look at my family. You know, you thought you had a bad childhood. Well, look at my childhood. So we almost hold it up like the golden egg, like it's we should be proud about how rough we had it in our past. And then we spend so much time looking at our future. Like, what are we doing tomorrow? What are we doing next week? You know, am I going to have enough money in retirement? Am I going to do this? How, you know, what's going to happen to me in the future? That we never, it's very difficult for us humans to slow down and live in that present moment, live each and every day in that present moment, and know that we have a purpose for being here and try our very best every single day to fulfill that purpose. And that's where I
think. And the animals can teach us. Yes, the animals can teach us so much.
Absolutely.
And they do.
They do. They come in, you know, and they all have a purpose. There's a reason that they came into our lives. They show up usually when we least expect them. you know, they'll show up in manners of, even if we're looking for a dog or a cat, we go in with the idea that we want a certain breed or a certain type, and nine times out of ten, we end up with something totally different than we ever expected. Because that animal has that purpose. They're coming into your life to teach you, perhaps to heal you physically and emotionally, perhaps just to get you through a situation, to teach you how to open yourself up, and most importantly, to teach you how to live in that present moment. And so if we follow their lead, we're going to have a much happier life.
It seems like there's some valuable lessons, too, as a dog grows, or a cat, but I think mostly about dogs in this regard. When they get older and they're heading towards, you know, departing or going over the rainbow bridge, that it would be very helpful to openly communicate with the animal about that, as opposed to, oh my God, this can't be happening, I don't want to think about it, and then you deny it. But to openly be with your animal and communicate it openly, I would think the animal, I would haven't done this because I have been one who, oh, I don't want to talk about this, I don't want to face it, you know, I'm going to run away. But to openly be there and talk about it with the animal must be one of the most gratifying experiences, I would think.
Well, it is. It's very important. I think it's a very important process. You know, I do a lot of grief counseling, and I do a lot of preparation work because, you know, there are things that our animals want and need from us when in their later lives and before they go to make their transition. And truthfully, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the old saying of the dog going away to die is very valid. Animals, I've learned over the years, you know, if they had their preference, they would not want us to go through the heartache and want us to see what they're going through. They think it's easier on us if they go and do it on their own. And so that's why if they're able to, we often see them leave the house to make their transition.
Yes.
Or they pass when we're not there. We're at work, we're at school, or we're at vacation, whatever it may be, they'll make their transition. But if we've communicated with them ahead of time and let them know that we'll honor whatever they want, but here's what we need, they'll do their very best to honor us. So that's why in those situations, if we need to be there during the transition, and we need to see it, and we need to be there at their last moment, they'll do their very best to try to do that. But it's one of those things we want to communicate ahead of time, and I think it's one of those things that we, you know, when we have a loved one that's going to make their transition or is getting close to that, we sort of do some preparation for ourselves. We spend some more quality time with them, hopefully. Hopefully we understand what their needs are and they understand our needs, and we come to some sort of decision that will make it, it's never easy, but it's never easy to, you know, deal with the process, but it makes it a little bit easier to see how they're wanting to make their transition and how they're dealing with it. And I think we can learn a lot from them also in those latter years and when they make their transition, in the fact that, you know, animals, I think, have a very firm understanding that their bodies are here as their mechanism, their tool, their vehicle to use while they're here. And they try to make the best of everything they can while they're in that body. And then when they do make their transition, it's a lot easier. You know, it's not as painful. They're able to, you know, they may go through the same gyrations. It may have the same outwardly appearance that we would go through if we had a particular thing that we were our last cause before we made our transition. But you'll notice it's much shorter. It's much briefer. And
yes.
I do believe it's because our animals, you know, understand their bodies and understand it's a vehicle, and they're willing to let loose of it when that time is the right and perfect time. And unfortunately, us humans, we really need to learn from that, because we often think that our bodies are who we are. It's not our vehicle.
Mm.
That's not the correct way. It's not, our bodies have nothing to do with why we're here. It's not our essence, not our purpose for being here. So we need to release, and we need to release that negative energy. And when our time is done and that body no longer serves us, hopefully we've done everything we possibly could to fulfill our purpose for being here, and then just release easily and go off into that heavenly space, that universal space, however you want to envision it, and release from that. So I think it's another lesson we can learn from our animals.
Yes, because we had two beautiful dogs before Pearl, who were very close companions, and the one died in the presence of the other, and then it took, I thought, well, since this dog died in front of Ulysses, the dog who lived only 9 months after that, he got cancer, and it was pretty much of a gruesome affair in some ways, except that we treated it pretty much naturally. And but I think had I spoken to him more openly, it's like an open communication with the animals, to sit down and tell them how I felt and how he must feel. And, you know, Mukunda is no longer here physically, but he will be here with you at all times, which he was. You know, he was there all the time after he passed. And I just feel like I needed to be, I'm learning from this, that about this one part of life with the animals, because they don't live that long of a life. So we have to realize that when the end draws near, we need to be more open about what is going on, more open and more embracing of the truth of the matter. Of course, we're not our bodies, and we are spiritual beings having a physical reality. And the dogs understand that. The cats understand that. I've had many cats just wander off to die. You know, the dog, and my dog Ulysses wanted to do that also, but I wouldn't let him. You know, he died. They both Mukunda died in my arms, and so did Ulysses 9 months later. And that was very interesting experience. But I just wish I had been. And it was a very gratifying experience, and it was just a wonderful experience. But I wish I had been more open and more communicative about the whole thing with both of those dogs. It would have been really awesome to be more verbal and just more open, I would say, more open and about what was going on.
Absolutely. You know, when you have animals that are close to each other in a family unit, perhaps they grew up together or perhaps they're from the same litter, they have that bond. And, you know, they go through the same grieving process that we do. They go through the same sadness that we do. I think that they bounce back from it a lot quicker in a couple of ways, because, one, they do know that they're only here for a short time and that their bodies are just a vehicle while they're here. I firmly believe they understand that. Also, they're able to communicate with each other ahead of time. So they know what's going on with each other ahead of time. And usually there's, you know, from my experience, what I've seen is whenever you have two animals together and one's transitioned right in front of the other one or in the same room, the one that's still living will come up and just check the animal out and say, okay, yeah. You know, it's sort of like, I knew that. We've already talked about that.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. And we've experienced that, too. We had two schnauzers, Buzz and Woody, that grew up together. And they're tight as tight can be. One never went anywhere without the other. And as Woody passed away in my arms, in the bathroom in the wee hours of the morning, we told Buzz about it. He was in the other room sleeping, and he simply walked in, checked him out, and said, "Yep," and he walked back.
Yeah.
And everything was fine. Everything was fine after that. And Buzz went on to live another year and a half, and we had a really close life together. So I think they do understand that. And I think it's a big part of helping us with that grieving process as well. Communicating with them ahead of time gets us sort of understand that we've done everything we can. We've talked to them about it. We feel better about it because, you know, us humans, we're notorious for beating ourselves up.
Hiding from pain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why didn't I do that sooner? Did I do enough? Did I do it too soon? Did I do it too late? You know, on and on and on, and we beat ourselves up. And the fact that, you know, we're here, and we're here to take care of them, communicate with them ahead of time, and I think that will ease you into the process and help you better understand it afterwards. And though you'll still grieve in your own time, in your own manner, I think you'll feel better about it and the fact that you've done what you could do and you had that opportunity to communicate with your animals before they made their transition.
And the fact that they are much more adept at handling it than we are anyway. I mean, as you just mentioned with your schnauzers, they were just, they understood. I had dogs years ago where the death of one was simply acceptance on the part of another. It was very, very interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a matter that they don't care, because they do have feelings for each other. They do have love for each other, and they do care. It's just they've talked about it ahead of time, and so they've come to sort of a terms or an understanding ahead of time, and they realize that that part of their journey for that particular animal is done, and we'll all be back together again. We all go to the same place and space and time, so we're that energy that we're around when we're in body is going to be the same loving energy, spirit, soul, essence, however you want to label it, that we're going to feel after we leave that body.
That's right. So we've come pretty much to the end here, Tim. Tell us in some parting words what you would like our audience to take away from your amazing experience with animals.
Yeah, I think the key thing that I talk about, and I talk a lot about this in the book, Talking with Dogs and Cats, it's learn to connect with them. Learn from your animals. Build the best relationship possible by communicating and being in that present moment with them and bond with them at the deepest level possible. And I know a lot of folks out there, including myself, you know, have a love for our animals. We're with our animals all the time. And we're very, very close to our animals. But are we really communicating with them, and are we really digging in there deep so they understand us and we understand them to have the best relationship possible? And so we'll leave that there. Communicate with your animals verbally, visually, and positively, and I think you're going to have an even better life with them.
Oh, I'm excited about the future with my animals, I'll tell you. Go to www.talkingwithdogsandcats.com to learn more about what Tim offers and get the book. And, you know, this is a wonderful way to, a wonderful project that we can all go forth and become better communicators and better lovers. You know, better, I would say we can become better lovers of our beautiful animals.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much again, and I look forward to talking with you again, I hope.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity to come on. Great chatting with you, and look forward to speaking to you again real soon.
Thank you, Tim. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.